Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
You know, I told the players even before, before the selection show came on, I said, you just got to be happy to be in it. You got to have the right mindset to worry about getting ready for the opponents you have. And you can't do anything about what they, you know, where they send you, what happens. And if you do, you're going to get distracted.
Everybody in the NCAA tournament that won their league championship is on a roll. New Mexico State's on a serious roll. Auburn's on a serious roll. And Northeastern's on a serious roll. But that's what happens when you have the winners of your conference tournament. They've all won 3 or 4 games in a row at minimum. So certainly we know we're playing a hot team, and we know we're playing a team that's at full strength.
And now a man who said, sure, Mike Trout has a lot of money, but is he really happy? Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro, the program on Sports Radio, 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on a pre-tournament Tuesday. This is about the time where everybody starts to go, okay, let's go. Let's get it started.
Yes.
The good news is it does get started today.
Yippers.
Play-in games tonight. No, not daytime games, but play-in games tonight. Very exciting to have the play-in games. I love the play-in games, and I will tell you yet again, I'm ready for expansion. I've got a new expansion theory. Let's try this one on you. By the way, we'll talk some NCAA tournament. Trent Rush is the play-by-play voice of the Anteaters, along with a lot of other jobs. Busy man.
Yes.
Busy man, Trent Rush.
Iron and many fires.
Where all is he the voice of?
He is the voice of the UC Davis women's basketball team, the UC Irvine men's basketball team, and he also is a reporter for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So he might have some news on that Mike Trout guy.
We'll talk to him about that at that time. Does he report for a radio station and the Angels are the beat, or does he work for like an Angels owned?
He does. I'll have to look up the call letters. I think it's 660 something.
Okay. Many irons in the fire included in that. He's a man who speaks Anteater.
He does.
So,
although I refer to them as Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in my sports center. I think they dropped that after 2015. They're now just the Los Angeles Angels. They dropped the Anaheim part.
Really?
According to Baseball Reference.
Whatever. Yeah, that, like 10 years from now, it'll be something different. They change their name all the time. We'll get to the bottom of that. Like, pick a name, Angels.
I always liked the California Angels.
I thought it was great.
Maybe it's just because that's what I grew up with, but
thought it was great.
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim was dumb. It's too much.
Well, what's wrong with the Anaheim Angels? Oh,
it's okay.
We want people up in the northern part of L.A. to feel like we're their team. They're not coming.
They're not.
Having driven across L.A., they're not coming to a game tonight. It's not happening.
That is one of those examples of two teams kind of sharing the same city, but just so distinct in the areas the teams are. It's just
Wait a minute. What? Two team town, is it not exactly like that? It's like that for all of them.
I mean, the proximity, the vibe necessarily in the city. I mean, the Cubs and White Sox are just, you pick a team, South Side, North Side. But it seems like from what's described to me, the difference between Dodger fans and Angel fans and the areas are more distinct than they are.
Yeah,
say, with the Mets.
Everyone in LA is a Dodger fan,
and then no one's an Angel
and
fan.
And Orange County is Angel fans.
Right.
That's it.
But the Orange County is like, it might as well be in San Diego.
And yes, the northern parts of San Diego County will come to Angels games.
But Chicago Cubs and White Sox aren't necessarily. And
nobody
Yankees
in Chicago is a White Sox fan. They're all Cub fans. And then there's a handful of people on the South Side that call themselves White Sox fans.
Same with the Yankees and Mets. Everyone's a Yankee
fan. Yes, everybody's a Yankee fan. And then there's some people over in Queens that are Mets fans.
A handful.
That's,
and our friend Kenny Holland. That's about it.
Yeah, and Jerry Seinfeld.
You're right.
But he's also a Yankees fan at the same time. I was going to make that joke, too.
Is he really?
Yeah, he wears Yankees hats all the time, but he is a Mets first, I guess.
Boo. Pick a team.
I'll tell you who's a fan of both. Clowns, like Rene Brunetti. I root for the Yankees and the Mets. I root for the Giants and the Jets. But you grew up in Kansas City, Rene. Well, I'm a Chiefs fan first. You know, then shut up. Those of you that know my friend Renetti know the endearing pleasure that it is to try to unravel some of the mysteries of Renee's brain.
Well, you just shortened his name to Renetti. That's
Ever Ready Brunetti?
You just changed Renetti to Renetti. I like that. It's one name.
Renato Brunetti could be a soccer player. Renato Brunetti. Yeah. Featured in a local publication for being one of the last guys that still throws his pizza dough.
Yes. Quality.
So there you go.
Good man.
There you go. So they're all like that. Islanders,
just
only
heard,
on
heard,
Long
heard
Island.
More stories about the separation.
Rangers,
the
all of New York. Devils, all of Jersey.
Yeah. That's something. Is it who's there first or who wins?
No. Oh, is it? I don't know. But everybody, there's always the power team. Yeah. And then the second-class citizens.
The Mets have been there for almost 60 years. They're still the
absolute second-class citizens.
Yeah.
Absolute second-class citizens. A's Giants. Nobody in San Francisco is an A fan. They're all Giant fans.
What? Have you seen the attendance at the Coliseum?
Not many in Oakland are A's fans.
Yeah, no kidding.
They're mostly Giants fans. So they're all like that. They're all like that. So we'll talk about that and much, much more with Trent Rush.
Much more.
Trent, you're the voice of the Anteaters, but let's talk about how the hell you pick a squad to root for in L.A. Gary Parrish, our outstanding college basketball insider from the CBS Sports, will be with us in the noon hour. We'll talk tournament with Gary Parrish, we will. Mick Schaefer's coming in, folks. That means there will be an epic battle. We'll fight the feud. Mick will bitch about the rules. He'll complain. He'll be overly competitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of Mick.
It is.
It's how he rolls.
The story of Mick.
Numerous times he'll ask for one of his team.
Yep.
He'll complain about the caliber of question. And if you choose wisely, you'll go to Il Lazzarone Pizzeria and experience the only authentic Neapolitan-style pizza in Kansas City because you have called in, chosen to be a part of this epic feud, and you have won or been a really swell guy and funny.
So,
but if you're not funny, don't try to be funny because I'm not giving it to you for not being funny. So just keep that all in mind.
It's a tightrope you have to walk.
It is.
But it should be. That's the hell of a prize.
I think so. We have a lot of things to talk about here to start the program. Who's that?
Who that?
Any idea who that is on my screen?
Who day?
He's just looking. Oh, okay. I just want to know. All right. So we got a lot to get to here today. I don't even know where to start. Like, I have lots of things that I'm interested in, but we don't really have, like, a headliner, do we? Does anybody think one of them's a headliner more than another? No? All right, good. I'm going to go with this then. Can you win in professional sports without tanking?
If you have a lot of money in baseball.
We've, just FYI, I think, lost our headphones in here. So if we're on the air.
There we go. Okay. I thought my headset had gone bad, but.
I don't know. Have we not been on the air? Are we on the air?
It was when Jed popped in the last time when he released it.
Okay. Because all of a sudden you were freaking out.
I lost you, but you were talking. You seemed kind of normal. I'm like, is there a reason he's not reacting to not hearing his voice in his headset?
Have we not discussed how the headsets work on this side? Like, not really. They just don't.
It's true.
And every now and then someone will come in and they fiddle with something. They go, yeah, it's all fixed. No, it's not. Hasn't been for
Well, I lost one side a year ago on my headset, so I just figured the other side went, and it was, well, that was odd. I was about to text it, can someone get me a headset that works? And I realized, eh, it's just not me.
You know, at some point, the audio part of it will seem important to someone. Till then, we press on.
Yeah. Tanking? Tanking work in, or do you have to tank? What was the premise of the question?
Do you have to tank? Can you win without tanking? Is there anything you can do to prevent tanking? I bring this up multifaceted, right? Number one, interesting discussion this morning on the Border Patrol as they were going through the Major League Baseball rules with Jamie Bluma. And they were talking about the new rules, the one about the trade deadline being removing the 8/31 deadline, the August trade deadline, and just having one trade deadline. Everything has to be done by July 31st. And I think it was Nate who said, well, they're trying to alleviate the tanking. And he explained, he said, you know, there are a lot of teams around 500 at that July 31 break, and they still think they're in it, and they like that extra month to wait till the 8/31 deadline and see, okay, are we still in it? Let's go ahead and see if we're going to get hot. If we get hot and we can pull 6-7 up and 2-3 back, then, okay, we'll make some moves at the 8/31 deadline. But if a team falls out of it, then they use the 8/31 deadline to shed any remaining payroll that they've got that they can get off the books, which would then be their way of tanking. And I get that in theory, but let's go a couple of steps further. You're tanking what? September? Or is that your move? Is that when a team decides on August 30th that they are going to tank for the next 3 years? Tanking is not dropping a player or two. Tanking is shedding everything, plummeting to the absolute bottom of the standings in an attempt to get a top pick, to have the extra money that comes with the draft pick, get the top picks, get the extra international money. That's the tanking part of the equation. Okay? You know, that's not what, you know, a tank is not just to, okay, we're out of it this year, we're going to get rid of some guys that have only a month on their payroll. So tanking, do any of these rules really prevent tanking? 26 on the roster, 28 is all the roster is going to expand to after September 1. So instead of having the full 40 players, you get to add two players. They're going to carry 26 the whole year to try to give a little bit more depth of pitching, because that's what every team will use it on, is an extra pitcher. Has that alleviated tanking? I say no, because what will happen in reality, if the idea is that by on July 31, teams, they won't know yet, so they won't shed payroll. I disagree. On July 31, teams will decide, well, we're kind of mediocre and maybe we could get hot, but are we really going to cut through the super teams in baseball and win a world championship? I think they'll all look themselves in the mirror. They'll have to be a lot more honest, and they'll go, no. And so I think you'll see more trading. If the goal is to get more trading, a better trade deadline time of frenzy, I think that will happen. You'll get more trading. But the tank checkered flag, or green flag, I guess it would be. Excuse me. I watch racing. The green flag will be waved at that. There'll be no waiting. And I think a mediocre team that knows they're not really good will have to be a lot more honest with themselves. And instead of not doing something and so they can save face with their fans, they'll have to admit, listen, the teams are making their moves. They're going to go for it. So they're tanking. We got to go. We got to unload everything we can for the young talent that's out there. Because if we don't, all the good prospects are going to go to the teams that are. They will follow the leader. Somebody will say, our course is set. We want the prospects. And everybody else will go, well, we don't want them all gone before we get there. We're not waiting till the winter meetings. So let's go. So I think you'll have many more teams tank out. I think the haves and have-not line will be clearly defined on July 31st. So Nate brought up the idea, will they move it back? They might. They might move it back to August 15th, split the difference, and get a little bit more. But at the end of the day, can you really rebuild without tanking? The Royals are trying. They're the case study. They're not doing it. And right now they have Sal Perez hurt for an entire year on their roster. The initial movements, last year they weren't tanking. They lost 104 games. It didn't work. Not tanking sucked. Oh, but no, they tanked. No, they didn't. They adamantly said, we're not tanking, and that's why they signed the players they did at the end, and they still sucked. So why didn't you tank? Well, because we don't want to be that bad this year. All right. So what do they need to do? I think some clear lines need to be defined. What do the Royals need to do this year for us to say this was a successful not tank? I think it's a two-pronged answer. One, prospects have to develop. At some point, you got to start creeping up some of those prospect lists. The Royals and every team. I think we maybe give the Royals more credit for having non-top 100 or top 200. Now I see lists of 300 and 400 prospects. Top prospects like Sal Perez and Whit Merrifield. So do other teams, okay? We just never, ever saw it here before the Dayton Moore regime. So Dayton Moore is better than previous regimes where they spent no money in Latin America or in the draft. He's better at that. So you have Whit Merrifield's and Sal Perez's. But you need some of the top 100 guys too. Eric Hosmer's, Mike Moustakas's, Danny Duffy's. You need some of those guys to come through the system as well. All right? You need some of the great prospects to play in the future stars game. All right? So we need to see some of those prospects come up this year. And then don't lose 95 games. Right? How about don't lose 90? 73 and 89. What's the bar we want to set? Because we need to set it before the year. We've always talked about being proactive as opposed to reactive. Because when you're reactive, well, they had injuries. And this guy, they didn't know. He's like, no. Here we sit with the squad in hand. What do they need to do on the field, wins and losses? Not tanking means you're not going to pile up a bunch of losses. So you don't get to sit back after 102 loss season, after 104 loss season, and say, well, we had a bunch of injuries. Everybody has injuries. You know who loses 100 games with injuries? The teams that sucked. Because they have no depth. They have nobody in the system ready to step up and play at a high level. There's no Whit Merrifield to plug in. You sucked. So if you're not tanking, if you're not going to embrace it, you don't get to lose 100 games again and go, well, but we had injuries. No. Then tank. Then full-blown tank. And the point about Sal Perez being out is that that was a resource. You could have gotten something for Sal Perez. If you can get something for John Jay, you can get something for a healthy Sal Perez and a lot more. I'm not trying to run Sal Perez out of town. And I will point out that the team that is the poster child for tanking is the Houston Astros. And they kept Jose Altuve. They did not ship everybody out. So you can still tank and keep Salvi to develop your young pitching. And if he gets hurt, sucks, but he's going to come back, hopefully strong as ever, from Tommy John surgery and still be that guy. I'm fine with it. But keeping Salvi and Witt and Kennedy and Duffy and not eating money in deals to ship off expensive players, no. You keep all those guys, you're choosing to not tank. So you're not allowed to lose 100 games. Because those were resources that could have added to your rebuild. And then, oh, by the way, at the other end, you got to go back to the playoffs. The plan had to have worked. Now, I get the idea that tanking, if 16 teams are tanking, you can tank and end up with the 16th pick. So if that's what everybody's doing,
yeah,
maybe there's a yang to the yin. Well, okay, then that's not tanking, but that's still just reading the market and adapting and overcoming and choosing a new path. I'm open to the fact that that's what the Royals are doing. But if they come out with a payroll that's $120 million and they don't have enough talent to compete, then it wasn't a success. The Rays have never tanked. They've never bottomed out. The A's have never tanked. Neither one's won a World Series. The Rays haven't been back to the playoffs since, what, 2 years? They make it 2 years after their World Series run, and that's been it.
I think 20 will.
They won 91 games in a very competitive division last year but did not get back, and then they sold off some more pieces. They just play it down the middle. The A's have gone from being bad but never horrible to being good playoff team but have never advanced in the playoffs.
Haven't won a postseason game or series.
All right, so can you do it? Is tanking real in the NBA? Of course it's real. A couple of teams now, the Nuggets. I don't think I can accuse the Nuggets of an all-out tank. I don't know that you can accuse the Bucks of an all-out tank. Their rebuilding processes probably started about the same time as the Sixers, so maybe they're not fair to hold up as a team that didn't tank in an era where people now view the tank as the only way to go, or some view it as the only way to go. What about football? If we're looking at baseball and saying we want to avoid tanking in baseball, does football have tanking? Has anybody tanked in football? The closest example I would give you would be the Raiders last year, but I'll even tell you that they didn't tank. They lost 104 games like the Royals, okay? They finished fourth worst, not worst, because they kept the quarterback, Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. He wasn't great. In fact, he wasn't good. But he wasn't a train wreck of a disaster that tears you down to where you've got the number one overall pick. This was also not a draft that had a definitive 1-1 franchise-style quarterback. The Chiefs are always going to be a problem in this scenario, the tanking idea in the NFL, because they've grabbed what looks like the best young quarterback in football, and they did it with pick 10. They didn't have to tank out to get to him. But now that he's there, it's getting a lot harder to find that quarterback. Teams are much more protective of all the quarterbacks. The pendulum has swung, and the quarterbacks are now overvalued because the Chiefs hit. And even up at number two, the Bears move from 3 to 2, and Mitchell Trubisky looks pretty good with Matt Nagy. He's not Mahomes, but he looks pretty good.
And Deshaun Watson's been good, too. The top three quarterbacks in that draft
have been pretty good.
They've won.
Yes. And those teams have been in the playoffs. So is tanking going on? The NFL also makes it harder because they have a salary floor. It's 88 or 95%. I forget what the number is. The 88%, I think, of the salary cap number you have to spend in cash. You don't get to just roll down at even the floor. Even the floor, you can't just sit at the floor. But they have a floor. It's a real floor that you can't fall below. It's a built-in mechanism to keep you from an all-out tank in the NFL. So the NFL has the floor, but comes with that a cap, which baseball's never been really willing to go with. The PA has not been willing to go with. Really, the owners haven't been willing to go with. So instead, they have a diet cap called a luxury tax. But now comes this news. Reports out of Miami that the Dolphins, when it comes to their quarterback, are focusing on a new quarterback. You know who it is? Tua Tagovailoa in the 2020 draft class. How do you focus on a guy you can't draft for one more year? You get into a position where nobody can draft him before you. That means you try to get the number one pick. How do you get the number one pick? You have a quarterback that's okay to good on his best days. You get rid of him. Ryan Tannehill is traded to be the backup of the Tennessee Titans, and you go get Fitzmagic. You strip him of all weapons, all blocking, and you head into a season intent upon being the worst team in the NFL so you can get the franchise quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. You've done your backup. You've done your groundwork. You've done your homework. You know what he is. You think he is a Peyton Manning. You think he is an Andrew Luck. You think he is a no-doubt, surefire 1-1 draft pick, of which there was even question on Peyton Manning, but going into his senior year, nobody was talking about Ryan Leaf. Guys that are 1-1, no-brainers. The Miami Dolphins, if this report is true, have embarked upon being the worst team in the NFL so they can get the next can't-miss franchise quarterback, because that's more important than the 52 other spots combined. Combined. It's more important than those 52 spots. And they have set sail on a mission to tank. I would offer this to Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NFL. The beauty of the NFL system back in the day was that the NFL created parity. They helped the worst teams. Worst teams picked first. There was an NFL draft long before there was a Major League Baseball draft. Baseball used to just go out, scout guys, sign them. Whoever signed them first got them, just like Latin America. The NFL had a draft. Nope, we're going to pick the best players. And the worst team gets first pick. The schedule was made more difficult for the better teams. Baseball has a balanced schedule. Come up with a last place schedule. Make it easier for the weaklings to get better. Because in reality, tanking has been what you should do all along. It's just most of the people running the operations weren't smart enough to figure it out, couldn't get their ownership to buy in, or didn't want to face the negative reaction of their fans, or D, all of the above. It has always been what was best to win. Recognize when you're not good enough. Strip it down. Use all resources possible in a system that rewards the worst with the better pick. It's what you have to do. And short of a salary cap, it's the only way to make sure. If you're talking about relegation and, well, let's do it like the EPL does it. Well, I'm fine with that, but Kansas City will suck forever and be playing in the minor leagues often. Because there's about 8 clubs in the EPL that know they're never going down. They're the ones that spend. So we can talk about that, but it's not going to end well in Kansas City. It's going to end well for teams named Yankees, Cowboys, Knicks, Giants, Jets, Bears, Cubs, Bulls. Those are the teams that will benefit from relegation. So you can take that off the board. It's not going to happen. So therefore, teams have no choice but to maximize their resources, of which part of gaining resources is by being bad. Until that changes, and I see no route for it to change, that's what's going to have to happen. So instead of trying to make it harder to tank, make it easier. Make the tanking process faster. Give them more of the high picks. Give them more of the resources. Reward them even more so. You're not rewarding them enough. The tanking, the problem isn't the tanking. The problem is how long you have to tank for. Either suck it up, grin and bear it, and know that there is, much like is occurring at times, according to people I hear, no middle class anymore. There certainly is no middle class, nor should you be in the middle class of sports, because it doesn't work. So then expedite the process of helping those on the bottom get back up. Drag the success of those on the top. Baseball and their rules and avoiding tanking, shut up, go away. Grow a pair, get a salary cap, get a floor, revenue share with your players, and really tighten the gap of which you can operate business on. Real revenue sharing, or it's not going to happen. So otherwise, shut up, let us tank, and get to it. And applaud the tanking, celebrate the tanking, because middle class sucks. Not many more people go to see a middle class team play than they do a loser. There's no incentive to be middle class. So stop trying to figure out how to eliminate tanking. You can't. You can't do it until you eliminate the resources, of which is an impossibility, because then they'll never get better. The Dolphins, in a system built to avoid tanking, the smarter system for many years, always working towards parity, always equal partners amongst, well, mostly equal partners, at least on a national revenue scale, the NFL, now has a team that said, screw it, we're tanking. Forget it, baseball. If the NFL's doing it, you're done. Don't even bother with it.
By the way, it's 89% cash spending.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It doesn't apply to any one season. We're in the second of two four-year windows, 2017 to 2020. But within that four-year span, you have to have spent at least 89% of your cash. So if they've been above that number the last 2 years,
they can tank down.
They can drop it. It's even easier for them to tank because they don't have to hit that number. If they've been over it, they got all kinds of leeway to tank. It's even easier for the Dolphins.
If the NFL's tanking, stop messing with it. Now, listen, I give Dayton Moore the opportunity to be a tremendous success, that he is zigging when everybody else is zagging, that they're all going for the tank, and in reality, many teams are going to be left wanting. And listen, you can not tank and still be good. The Chiefs did it by going and getting Patrick Mahomes. It takes bold moves. It takes a step back. You remember what happened when they went and got him. There were some people that freaked out. Let's not act like everybody was on board with what the Chiefs did, even just to take one step back to hopefully take four steps forward. There were many people that said the Chiefs were ridiculous for making this move. So that's how you avoid tanking, though, a bold move like that, which was not – most of us in Kansas City loved it because we'd never seen the team draft a quarterback. But there was plenty of people who wanted no part of it. They wanted something to help the right now and didn't even want to take a step back for 1 year to try to get three or four steps better. They weren't willing to do it. They needed Instant gratification. Help Alex Smith, they said. Okay. Well, tanking's that times 10. Do you got the stomach for it? I say you better find the stomach for it because you got no choice. It's by far, in my opinion, the best way to go in any professional sports league. 913-810-810. You're in the program.
You're in the program.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Curtis Siebold, authoring the Sports Centers. Jed Marshall running the operation. 913-810-810 if you'd like to chime in on the conversation. Anybody disagree, by the way, with my tanking?
No.
The only way to go? And I think fans are smart enough to get it. And the reward is winning afterwards. Better be the reward. If it's not, then the fans, then you just suck and you're fired anyway. So,
yeah, just being in the wash is tougher and tougher to find the route from there to the top. There was a time when it was a little easier, but the teams with resources and good organizations have found a way, even in a system somewhat gained or designed to force parity, have found a way to still game it and
Well, I think the NFL's rules have made the quarterback so important that it does not matter what you're doing unless you have one of those quarterbacks. You're going to need to be absolutely perfect with the other 52.
Yep.
And you're better off doing things to try to go get the franchise quarterback. Let's watch the Broncos. Let's see if Joe Flacco works.
What the Chiefs did was almost a moon landing.
What the Chiefs did was
going from 27 to 10 and getting – a potential Hall of Famer. That just does not happen.
I will give credit to the Chiefs for everybody involved, the biggest people. John Dorsey, Chris Ballard. Was Ballard already gone when they drafted him?
I think he was.
Yeah, he was. So not
was
Ballard.
A year after he
John
left.
Dorsey, Brett Veach, Andy Reid will all get credit, right? I know Veach is the guy that's being held up, and from what I've heard he did all the legwork on him. But I give them all credit. To me, what they did was they looked at the Green Bay Packers and they said, well, we don't have Brett Favre, but we got a pretty damn good quarterback in Alex Smith. Mm. But what we need is a championship one. And the Packers had it just slide down. They're like, we cannot believe this guy's here. We think he's the bomb. We're going to grab him. And they trusted their instincts and they took him. The Chiefs said, okay, that's been the recipe. Now, the Colts, Andrew Luck fell in their lap because Peyton Manning got hurt. Mm-hmm. And so they bombed out that year. And he found out that's what we want to be.
Yeah.
All right, so when we get to the franchise quarterback, we're going to go get him when we see the guy. I think it's entirely possible he was the first guy that anyone in that organization said, this guy can't miss.
And what the good fortune was is that no other team. Now, they, of course, get all the credit for doing the due diligence and identifying him as the guy. But all it would have had to have happened would be for one team ahead of them to think the exact same thing, and he never gets to it.
That's right.
And so, but I don't think that happens anymore because happened with him.
Yeah, exactly.
So they get all the credit, but there was still some good fortune that nine other teams didn't notice what they noticed.
Everything is built up. I said this today. Listen, you want to build the fastest jet? You don't have to figure out how to get a plane off the ground. You don't have to start at the Wright brothers. They figured out lift a long time ago.
Right.
Okay. And better propulsion has come along. What you got to do is figure out a better jet, right? If you can figure out better wings, great. But you don't have to figure out, can we get off the ground? Everything builds upon itself. The Packers had fate smile on them. The Colts had fate smile upon them. The Chiefs looked at that and said, "We don't. Fate's not smiling on us, so we got to go make it happen. And this is the kid to go do it. And now every team out there is going to do the same thing. And you're right. The Dolphins can't play a 9-7 season out and then think that they're going to be able to go up and go get Tua. They're looking at this kid saying, this is the guy. And make no mistake about it, the kid at Clemson is coming the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a second year of playing good football, I don't know, after 1 year that everyone's all in, right? He's a sensation, Lawrence. He's a sensation. After 2 years, it'll be definitive.
They're at least in as they were a year ago on Tua.
And they'll right.
But he has more of a longer track
record. And maybe it's just a matter of, maybe the better way to put it is, one year out, you can tank. The Dolphins are going to be the first team to try to tank down to get to Tua.
Yeah.
So that means, no, if the Chiefs were trying, if Tua, first of all, Tua is much more of a known commodity because he played with great talent around him. So he's got more wins, which makes everybody feel better. More win, if you win, then everybody thinks, well, there he's a winner. And so they're going to go try to do it. No, the Chiefs wouldn't be able to get up. They couldn't pull that off. So now they've said, okay, they're taking what the Chiefs did. The Chiefs said, okay, we'd sit back and be coy. We think we can get them at the bottom of the first. No, we got to go up and get them. So they went up in front of all the teams that were willing to take the risk, sitting where they were sitting. And now everybody's holding their cards closer as to who they are. They don't want to get jumped. They don't want to be the Cardinals and the Saints getting jumped by the Chiefs for the guy. So everyone holds their cards even closer. And they move even further to the top themselves. So I see no other choice. Baseball, if you want to help out baseball, allow trading of draft picks. Let the Royals trade Ian Kennedy having a good season to the New York Yankees, who had a pitcher go down on June 15th and need a dependable innings-eating starter for the Yankees' first-round pick. Let them trade number 26 and 5 to go up to number 1 to get the franchise guy. Allow pick trading to happen. It's farcical. Farcical that you can't trade draft picks in baseball.
Agreed.
The reason behind it is so archaic, so gone from the landscape, that if baseball is going to get around and mess around with forcing you to pitch to three batters, how about go back or change the trade deadline rule to avoid tanking? How about go back and help teams build? Make the expensive teams trade draft picks, great young talent, to these teams that need the young talent, instead of being able to automatically replenish their own system while still just outspending. It's insane. It's asinine how backwards baseball is, how incapable they are of figuring out what's wrong with their own game. Kevin, you're in the program. What's going on, Kevin?
What you're talking about reminds me of a quote Bill Veeck, and I don't know if you remember who Bill Veeck was.
I do.
Okay, but somebody, when he was owner of the Chicago White Sox, somebody asked him if the high price of superstars was killing the game, and he said, no. He said, superstars are worthless. The high price of mediocrity is killing it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why Bill Veeck was ahead of his time in a lot of things that he did. And, Kevin, thank you for the call. Go ahead. I appreciate it. Yes, mediocrity sucks, and it's not profitable. See the Rays. How's the Rays' attendance? They've avoided being awful for years since going to the World Series. How's their attendance? Sucks. Sucks. And it'll be the same thing here. Mediocrity doesn't sell. You know what sold? Getting good, getting above 500, and 13 people started pouring into the ballpark. In 14, they bought a lot more season tickets. And then when they got hot at the end of 14, they poured into the ballpark. 15, they blew up the ballpark. 16, 17, with the hope of winning, they went out and bought tickets. That's what gets it done in baseball. 913-3810-810. Brother Patrick, you're in the program. What's up?
I'm going to talk about bad boys here. I told Teresa, but I'm going to start off with the Chiefs.
Okay.
I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday, and I said, you know, these young folks get themselves all messed up on their way to being a millionaire. And I was talking about Tyreek Hill, or WeWork. And he said, well, Patrick, you just because you get money, you got to become you got to change your character. If you come from unusual background and all that, you don't change, well, that's not, you know, you're going to mess up somewhere. And it's so hard. Back in the day, you used to count on the guys you drafted being good guys. I mean, let's say in the 90s and et cetera. But today, it's, you know, you don't check on people like you used to. I guess with so many people, so it's hard to do. Let me ask one question. I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
Comment.
Okay.
I mean, they can ask, what's his name? Curtis, you can ask this question after I hang up. Do we play the Dallas Cowboys in a real game or exhibition game? I'll listen off that, Saran. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate it, Patrick. No.
Well, they played the East 2 years ago, so they wouldn't play them, and I don't believe they're scheduled in the preseason either.
They would be – I don't know if the preseason schedule's out yet, is it? They line that up.
I think the opponents are usually maybe I'm wrong.
But I don't think so. The Chiefs played them in 17.
Yeah. So they wouldn't be around again.
So they would play them again 20. In 20. No, 21.
Correct.
In 2021, they'll play the Cowboys again.
Yeah, no, they got the NFC North this year, Patrick. So that's the Bears, Lions, Packers, and
let me offer this interesting Vikings. Point that you make, Patrick, about character. Can a leopard change his stripes, change his spots? Right, that's the big question here. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to believe in the human condition enough to think that we can grow and mature and learn and become better. Given the opportunity, right? Isn't that what a second chance is all about? I think you can. But your point's interesting when you talk about back in the day, we used to be able to count on players. Listen, there are a lot of guys. There are two things that are different. One, there still isn't necessarily the appetite to hear that your star isn't a good guy. Because when we report things about Tyreek Hill or when I offer up the concept, just listen, what are we here in Sports Talk Radio? At best case, we're a think tank, right? Worst case, sports radio is, I don't know, grab ass, you know? I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that's even worse because grab aid doesn't generally have a negative result. I mean,
okay.
Some talk radio areas are positively damaging.
I think
it doesn't happen in sports, though.
There's still are many that have no appetite to hear that their star isn't a good guy. I've told the story about my friend asking me about different athletes, and I'm like, yeah, not so good. Yeah, no, not really good to deal with. And she said, well, I'm going to stop asking you because I just want to watch and enjoy the games, and I don't want to know.
They always say don't meet your heroes.
That's right. Now, that's she likes watching sports and doesn't want to know if they're a bad person because she just wants to root for her teams, and that's fine. It's also somewhat an acceptance and a tolerance, okay? So when we report something about Tyreek Hill being in trouble or saying, listen, these are the very real-life possibilities of what has occurred and what will happen, and a lot of fans immediately begin to engineer the reason why they should be kept on the team because they want to watch them score touchdowns, hit home runs, dunk the basketball. And that becomes their truth, and they work backwards from that truth as to why it should happen. There's no real want of finding the truth. What they want is for their stars to play, regardless of what they do. Until what they do wrong happens to them or their family member, then they're outraged. Or if something similar has happened to them or their family members, then they have outrage towards those people. I don't know. I can't rewrite human instinct. But let me say this. Part of the reason why you thought everybody was good in the 90s, there never was an appetite. There still isn't an appetite, really, to hear that any of the star players aren't good guys. But now there are cell phones everywhere. There are cameras in everybody's hands that record when people are bad people. It becomes known. Doesn't even now really take a reporter. The reporter often isn't the one who breaks the story. The reporter sees it on Instagram or Twitter and reports it. The journalistic community in a lot of ways has been made to be the bad guy for people getting information that they didn't want to hear. It's fake news. It's all those things. And that's become an accepted reaction to, no, it's just information. Now, listen, the journalistic community, many of my brethren who like to trumpet journalism as a great calling, as a pure moral calling, are some of the most impure at how they conduct themselves journalistically that I've ever seen. So my community have brought it on ourselves a lot. Okay, there's plenty of people in my line of work that suck, but set that to the side. Nobody had that appetite. We didn't have the phones to record it, but there are plenty of people. Listen, I'm going to tell you about a Hall of Fame player that I was that was joked about as the world heavyweight champ of wife beating. You know him. The world heavyweight champ of wife beating. I can tell you about another Hall of Famer that I heard the story about how he chased his wife into the streets, grabbed her by the hair, struck her twice, dragged her into the house. There were no cameras then. It was the 1970s. But everybody on the block that was outside on a warm summer day sure as hell saw it. And it was known in that community that that's who that guy was. He goes on today. He's around today. Hall of Famer, people lining up to get his autograph, sitting down to interview him, get his thoughts about things. Endorsers paying him to do interviews at the Super Bowl because people want to hear from him. Now, if he did that today, it would be no more. There would be fans that would be coming up with a reason why he should be kept on the team, but it wouldn't be anymore. Patrick, I would say that we were ignorant, and sometimes ignorance is bliss. We were ignorant because there weren't cell phones out there, because people didn't talk about it as much. There's also now a competition. There's so much media out there that there's a competition, and what gets the clicks first? Being first gets the clicks. What gets the most clicks? Being first to the story. So there is now a race to find information. Many of it not trained individuals looking for the information. It is what it is. Everything builds upon itself. Breaking news is big stuff. You'd think when Woodward and Bernstein broke news that we'd have breaking news everywhere. What have been the really big breaking news stories that we've had in sports? Really big. Everybody says the FBI thing. I mean, that's an FBI investigation.
Yeah, that wasn't the result of reporters digging in and finding
reporters things. Dug in and uncovered steroids in baseball. That's the big one that stands out with me.
Yeah. There haven't been that many.
But otherwise, everybody's a reporter now. We don't know who called in the child abuse or the child situation with Tyreek Hill. It's not listed on the police report. We know who was there. Was it one of them that called? Why isn't Tyreek Hill mentioned? I don't know. But that kind of thing goes on now. People ask questions. People see a child's arm. I don't even know if the broken arm or the casted arm. People tell me his arm wasn't broken. Okay, it was in a cast on an Instagram set up by Tyreek Hill. Why? I don't know. Was it a normal kid thing? He fell off the monkey bars? Was it child abuse? I have no idea. But Instagram photos of a three-year-old with a cast on their arm get noticed, and people ask questions. Everybody, certainly the famous, are much more exposed today than they've ever been. But so are you, not famous guy. So are you. And you make a Titanic mistake right out in the open, someone will be there to film it, to tweet it, to Instagram it, to text it. All those things are out there. Body cams on officers, car cams on the police cars, traffic cams everywhere. You fall asleep drunk in a corner in 1972, and the cop recognizes who you are and lets you go. Hey, dude, where do you live? 2 blocks away? All right, call somebody to have them get your car. I'm going to drive you home. You don't want this to happen to you and go on your record. No cops doing that today. There's a camera that shows the car sitting there for 14 minutes with its blinker on, not moving. Cop walks up and says, hey, I'm going to drive you home. I know guys who've driven athletes home. Police that have told me the story of back in the day. That's what you did. You can't do it now. You're going to jail if you do that as an officer. Everybody's on camera now. It's all out there. It's a lesson for all of us. Be better people.
The program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, listen. All right, real quick, let's wrap things up this hour. Kevin, you're in the program. What's going on?
Noel, I owe you lunch. The Eric Berry thing, actually, he played 3 games this year, so there's that part.
We wagered, and I said he'd be back, and you said he wouldn't?
Exactly. Lee Summitt.
Let me get you on hold.
Okay.
I don't know that any of us are bragging about the result either way. So let me get you on hold.
Deal.
We'll get some information and we'll settle up. I don't think you have to actually give me lunch. Yeah. Lots of people give me lunch. Like Rockin' Brews is bringing us lunch tomorrow. Oh yes.
Sweet and spicy Asian wings.
So I don't know that you will need to give me lunch, but I appreciate you calling in and saying that I won. I'll take that, Kevin. We will be at Rock and Brews on Thursday. Great spot to watch some NCAA tournament basketball. Rock and Brews over in the Prairie Fire. We'll take a break. We'll prep up the Jayhawks opponent next.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, KU and K-State, both four seeds. What was the last number four seed to make it to the Final Four? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.